The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
To the Paul Feinbaum Show. Alyssa Lang here filling in for Paul on this Monday. He will be back tomorrow. Don't you worry. The number is 855-242-7285. We'll get back to some of your calls in just a few minutes because right now we've got a guest joining us, Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South, here to talk about everything we saw during week two. Connor, thank you so much for hopping on with us today. Let's start with, I think, who has the biggest chip on their shoulders, the biggest reason to celebrate this week, and that's the Kentucky Wildcats. What did you think about the way they went into Gainesville, a sloppy football game, but came out with the win?
Look, I think I got everything wrong over the weekend. Most notably, I didn't predict that the Sun Belt was going to become the premier conference in college football. But the one thing that I actually got right was I said Kentucky was going to go into the swamp and win that football game. And part of that was because I thought that back-to-back for Florida was brutal. Having to face Utah, then having to face Kentucky in the swamp consecutive weeks was really difficult. And I give Rich Gangarello, the offensive coordinator for Kentucky, a lot of credit because that team had negative rushing yards in the first quarter. And you know, all those NFL scouts are in attendance to watch Will Levis, to watch Anthony Richardson. It would have been really easy for him to say, let's throw the ball 40, 45 times. They didn't have Chris Rodriguez. And instead, they continue running the football. And they say, we are going to be able to outlast Florida in this game. And they did. And Kentucky is for real. And if you're sleeping on this team, you shouldn't be right now.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about what Mark Stoops has done in changing that Kentucky offense to going through the air a little bit more, but they're not going to get away from that identity that we've known so long in being able to run the football. Connor, you just said something that I think is really important, and I took so much heat for saying this in the offseason, that Kentucky looks like, you look at that schedule, they should be a 10-win team. At least they look like they're a team that's here to stay, certainly in the SEC East this season. Where do you think they fall right now, not only in the East, but in the grand scheme of the conference?
I think that second tier is really difficult to kind of figure out, okay, between Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. Those are the three teams that I think could all make a case to be the number three team in the SEC right now. I personally would give a little bit of an advantage to Arkansas, but I love what Kentucky's doing. I mean, that defense, it feels 2018-like. It really does. They're so physical in that front seven. And you saw, I mean, just ask Anthony Richardson about the way that that game played out. I give that group a lot of credit. Now, I think they're going to have some potential hurdles if they're not able to figure out those issues on the special teams. I mean, they essentially gave away 6 points in the special teams. They need to clean that up if they're going to beat some of these elite teams. But you look at that schedule, and you're exactly right. Like, God, the only one that you think they're probably definitely going to be a significant underdog is Georgia at home. Now, Georgia is a team that, of course, everybody's talked about all the pieces that they have to replace. They could be a very different team in a couple of months compared to who they are right now. But yeah, Kentucky has a legitimate chance to go to a New Year's Six Bowl, especially if they continue to play defense the way that they did at Florida.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you there. Back to the Florida Gators, you mentioned it. A tough way for Billy Napier to start the season going Utah, then Kentucky. Now they've got USF coming up this weekend, which was a breakout game for Anthony Richardson a season ago. Where do you think they go from here?
They're going to have better days. We need to stop doing the thing where we compare every great black quarterback to Cam Newton. We need to stop doing it. It's a problem. And I saw that play out a lot with Anthony Richardson, who does some extraordinary things. But this was a guy who was in his third career start, and he's still figuring out how to play the position. And it just bothers me so much that we want to jump to these conclusions. There's got to be another comp that we can make. Anthony Richardson does phenomenal things, and I think he's going to continue to do phenomenal things in the Billy Napier offense. But the problem that I have with him so far is that he doesn't really have that touch in the passing game. I thought Todd McShay had a great breakdown during the game talking about every ball looks like it's on the same line. He needs to continue to find that touch. They need to continue to find that rapport with those receivers. I think that ground game is going to be phenomenal. That offensive line looks much improved, and they're going to have a real identity. But Anthony Richardson is going to have to figure some things out. He will against USF. I mean, he looked phenomenal in that game last year. He looked unstoppable. But I do think that he's going to have an interesting path moving forward, and there's going to be more ups and downs.
I was going to say, you made the point, McShay made the point on Saturday night. It's hard to remember that it was just Anthony Richardson's third career start. This is still a really young quarterback that still has so much hype and so much promise. So stay patient, Gator fans, would be my message. Let's stay in the SEC East. Tennessee, how big of a threat do you think they could actually be now that we're starting to look into some conference games and get further into the schedule, more of this Tennessee offense on tape?
I like this team a lot. And I was really skeptical about the defense. I said throughout the offseason, I don't know if they're going to stop a soul. I really don't. But I've been impressed. And I think that what they did in that game against Pitt, where you really see Byron Young, Tyler Barron, those guys in the front seven kind of get after the quarterback, albeit a backup who was dealing with some mobility issues. But that was my big question with this team. It wasn't going to be, what do they have on offense? They have so much firepower and so many different guys that they can turn to. They have three guys who are legitimate go-to receivers in that offense, especially with the emergence of Jalin Hyatt and Brew McCoy. We already knew Cedric Tillman was a stud and too many people were sleeping on him. But I think defensively is where they've shown some pretty impressive signs so far. Now, we'll wait and see what that looks like in SEC play. We know that they've got Anthony Richardson coming up in a little bit here. But I think that they're a team that has kind of that 9-win potential this year, because offensively, I mean, I've said it before, I think they can have the number one offense in college football. And part of that might be because they're in games in which they have to continue to score points. But they actually just had the lowest offensive output that they've had in a win in the Josh Heupel era. And that was 34 points, which came as a result of a touchdown in overtime. So I still think that Tennessee is a team that's going to give a lot of SEC defense problems. And I think that Josh Heupel is moving in the right direction in year two.
Yeah, that last stat is a scary thought for sure. We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. Let's go to the SEC West, and so many directions we could go, but I think we'd be remiss to not go to Texas A&M first. How surprised were you, as we were all making these predictions a week ago, that that's what went down in College Station with App State getting the win?
I think two things can be true at the same time. One is that the Aggies and USC were the two most overrated teams in the country entering the 2022 season. I did not think that team would lay an egg the way that it did against App State. I thought they would have some sort of offensive identity. There's no way that I predicted that team would be held to 9 first downs. $9 million buys you 9 first downs. I don't know what Jimbo Fisher is thinking, not turning to Max Johnson. He said afterwards that he would have played in that football game had they gotten more possessions. You know how you get more possessions? You get more production out of your offense. And the only way that they were doing that was going to be making quarterback change in that game. It's frustrating to watch this group struggle to run the football. They don't have guys that can get separation in the passing game as well. And you put a lot of pressure on that young defensive front to be able to get off the field. And they struggled with that down the stretch against App State. I think this schedule is daunting. I mean, I look at the defensive minds that they have coming up, and it's absolutely brutal. I mean, they got to face Kevin Steele, Charlie Strong this weekend. They, of course, have Barry Odom coming up. They've got Zach Arnett. Don't sleep on the 3-3-5 that he's building at Mississippi State. And then, oh, by the way, you've got Nick Saban. That is brutal for an Aggie offense that has looked lifeless so far. And I think that Jimbo Fisher has some major adjustments to make. That's not his strong suit. He's not been great at troubleshooting, even dating back to his days at Florida State. But he needs to troubleshoot in a big way right now.
Connor, I'm glad you mentioned Zach Arnett and Mississippi State, because I was going to throw a little bit of a curveball at you. Why is State not getting more love at this point? Two games into the season, two blowout wins over Memphis and Arizona. They go to LSU this weekend, and I predict that to be a high-scoring game on the side of Mississippi State, given what we've seen from LSU the last couple of weeks. Where's the love for Coach Leach and Will Rogers at this point? What am I missing?
If you're one of the AP voters that voted for Texas A&M in the top 25 instead of Mississippi State, just turn your vote in. Just be done with it. Just tell you, you've told the world that you don't want to watch football and you don't really care about the way that these things played out. Maybe you were already asleep when Mississippi State went into Arizona and torched that team. I realize they won one game last year, but they had a really impressive opening weekend showing it at San Diego State. And I look at this Mississippi State team and I say, okay, well, what's been their ceiling so far in the Leach era? I think that they've had some protection issues early on, and you always kind of question, can they actually play complementary football? Mike Leach has had one top 30 defense during his entire time as a head coach. That was back in 2005, a Texas Tech squad that went 9-3. this can absolutely be a top 30 defense. Mississippi State had a great stat that they threw out there from their media relations department. 17 guys on that defense, and they're too deep, are in year three in Zach Arnett's defense. Mm. It shows. Watch them play football. Watch them, what they do this weekend in Death Valley. They are always in those right spots, and they seem like a group that's really figuring some things out. I still want to see what it looks like with those new tackles against SEC competition in the post-Charles Cross world. But I'm a believer in Mississippi State, and I absolutely think that they deserve to be in the top 25.
Me too, especially when you look at the fact that they're using their two running backs in Johnson and Marks, combining for over 100 yards on the ground. Yes, in a Mike Leach offense. I think they're going to be putting some people on notice here soon. All right, Connor, before we let you go, Georgia, new number one team in the country. They look dominant again. Samford, not necessarily a challenge. I think we'll learn more about this Bulldog team coming up this weekend against South Carolina. But where do you stand as far as, is Georgia far and away, as some people think right now, the best team in the country?
Well, Samford, not necessarily a challenge. I don't know. Some Florida fans might disagree with you on that one. But I think that Georgia, the thing that really impressed me, seeing them in person in week one, was watching how much space that they create offensively. Their offensive identity has changed a lot with Todd Monken. That's kind of the underrated thing with what they've been able to do in these last couple of years, is Kirby Smart having that realization after watching what LSU did to them in the 2019 SEC Championship and saying, we need to evolve offensively. And Stetson Bennett has improved, but it's also the scheme that Todd Monken has been able to put together. And they can confuse you in so many different ways. Of course, we talk about the tight ends that they have all the time. And they just look like a group that's really finding its groove in the passing game. And that's important because defensively, they're going to regress. There's just no way they're going to be as historically dominant as they were last year. And I realize they've gotten off to a really nice start. And I love a lot of the young pieces that they have. But I still think that Georgia's potential is as one of the three teams that can win a national championship. That's Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State. That's the entire list, in my opinion. And I think what they've been able to do to start off has been impressive. I think that South Carolina offensive line is going to be way in over its head this weekend. I realize that game is at Williams-Brice, and Spencer Rattler could make some big-time throws. But against that Georgia defense, that is going to be a really tall task for that group. But yeah, I'm more and more of a believer in Georgia than probably I was even as recently as 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Shane Beamer said a season ago they got 105 stars or something like that. So we'll see what we learn about this Bulldog team. Like you said, on the road, Kirby Smart has been talking about, hey, we need this team to face some adversity and then we'll figure out what our identity is. We'll see if that's the case on Saturday. Connor, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time today.
Appreciate it.
That was Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. They do a great job over there covering everything across the SEC. Definitely your go-to place if you're trying to catch up on all the action on Sunday. We're going to take a break here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I know the phone lines are lighting up. We're going to do an hour straight of nothing but your calls coming up next here on the Feinbaum Show.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Thinking Out Loud is on tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time, right here on the SEC Network. Spencer Hall, Richard Johnson coming your way with an hour of recapping week 2. And I'm sure the guys will look ahead to week 3. We're actually going to have them in the studio coming up towards the end of the show to get their thoughts on everything they saw. And I will be yelling at Richard for trying to make me the poster child, potentially, of a Texas hype video should the Longhorns have won that game on Saturday based on a question that he asked me on the air. last week. We'll get into that coming up in about 2 hours, though, as we welcome you back into the Paul Feinbaum Show. Alyssa Lang in here today, filling in for Paul, who will be back tomorrow. It's time now, though, to take some more of your calls. 855-242-7285 is the number. Let's go to Richard in Florida. Richard, I know you've been hanging on for a while. What's on your mind?
Hi, Alyssa. How you doing? Listen, there's been a lot of talk about the Florida-Kentucky game. I'm a big Florida fan. And, Kentucky Wildcats are a good team. I'm not taking anything away from them. They're really, really good. They're not great, but they're a good team. And I'm not crying sour grapes at all, because we deserve to lose the game when you play like that. You can't throw an interception at your own 15-yard line and then throw a quick pick six the other way and expect to win the game. You're just not going to win the game. So Richardson told everybody at the end of the game, and it was publicized also, that he played a terrible game, and he put the whole weight of his shoulders on him, which he did. He deserved it, because that's what he did. He played a lousy game. That being said, I said before the beginning of the year that we'd be probably an 8-4 team with a new head coach and a lot of young players. And quite honestly, I thought at this point would be 0-2. I didn't think we'd beat Utah. So that was a surprise to win that game. I still say I think we're going to be an 8-4 team, which isn't bad considering what we have. You know, Richardson's going to be a great quarterback, but again, he's got to get that interception thing figured out. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for your call, Richard. I will say, I know that this Florida-Kentucky rivalry, as I've been shamelessly calling it, I know a lot of Florida fans have gotten on my case saying it's not a rivalry. Look at the numbers. Look at the last 50 years. Well, the last 5 years, it's certainly been a rivalry. Kentucky fans are feeling disrespected, not only by some Florida fans when we're talking and chirping about this rivalry, but by national media, who I think has done a poor job at times of giving Kentucky respect. So now that they've gone down into the swamp, back-to-back wins over Florida, I'm not even mad at them for chirping. Chirp away, Wildcat fans. I think you deserve it this week. Let's go to Dominique in Florida. Dominique, how's it going?
How you doing, man? Roll time, man. I'm so disappointed. And I'm going to tell you, for all the Alabama fans, we got every right. We should have lost the game. But I'm going to tell you right now what's the problem. And people are going to blast Bill O'Brien. This week, looking at the game, I had to rerun it again. It wasn't Bill O'Brien. It's our receiver. We don't have anybody that can go vertical to take the cover off the defense like we did last year with Jameson. But I think once we get the transfer from Louisville, Heron back, I think that's going to help us out. But our offensive line is terrible. And we getting beat like we was last year. There's no way Bryce Young should be running for his life with most of the guys that we had on the offensive line last year or back this year. And the thing about it is, I'm thinking that we got rid of Marone as an offensive line coach, but bringing this new guy, our offensive line would be much better. And for all the Alabama fans, this is the greatest thing that could have happened for us. We got two cupcakes to get prepared. We got Ulanda Monroe, then we got Vanderbilt. But we got to get a deep threat, man. We got a lot of possession receivers. Burton is a possession receiver for us. We don't have a Jameis Winston could take the cover off unless the transfer we got from Louisville could take it off. And another thing before I go, the caller that called in to talk about my brother teammate, he was talking about my brother Roman Harper. Roman mm-hmm. Harper know what he's talking about. He won a Super Bowl, like you said previous. But like I said, Kentucky fans, enjoy y'all football right now. I ain't hating on y'all, but when y'all get in the SEC, then y'all could talk. But other than that, it's still a roll damn tide.
Well, Dominique, thank you so much for the call. I think you made some interesting points about this Alabama team. Obviously, some things we have to get cleaned up, right? Questions we were asking going into the season about who those pass catchers for Bryce Young are going to be. And I know a lot of Tide fans were really stressed out watching Bryce Young run for his life. But if I could say anything, I know I haven't really given my take on this Bama win at this point. A win's a win. Going into Austin against a pissed off Texas team that would have liked nothing better than to ruin your day, coming out with Bryce Young, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, making incredibly athletic plays to win you that game. Look, it's a dub. You trust Coach Saban. You know Coach Saban knows what it takes to win, not only in the SEC, but nationally. I have no doubt they'll get it fixed up, and obviously a great opportunity to do some of that with Louisiana Monroe coming to Tuscaloosa this weekend. Let's go to Rick in Tennessee. Rick, what's on your mind?
Hi, Alyssa. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Hi. I just wanted to throw something out that I'm a Tennessee fan, first of all. Let me say that. And I was watching the game Saturday night with Pitt. The game was on a national network, ABC, but I was listening to the UT broadcasters. I had the sound muted on the national broadcast. During the play, or during the game, there was a play where a Tennessee receiver, Brew McCoy, was pushed out of bounds, came back in, caught the pass, and scored a touchdown. The Pitt coach challenged the play, and when the officials went reviewed it, they came back and ruled that it was a touchdown. They said it was because he had been forced out and immediately returned to the field. So that was good. I understood all that. But then after the play, one of the announcers for UT, who was working the game, made a comment that I'd never heard. So I wanted to put this out to you, and then I'll hang up and just listen. But I've been a college football fan since the early 60s, so I've seen a few games, and I've never heard this before. But he said, in his comment, he said, we, being Tennessee, were fortunate that it was a nationally broadcast game or a national network game, because there were a lot more cameras, a lot more angles, sideline cameras, et cetera, which aided Tennessee with that call, versus had it been a regional game where there would have been less cameras, less sideline cameras, et cetera. And I had never heard that before. I don't know if you have, but like I said, I just wanted to kind of put it out, see what your thoughts were, and anyone else who might have any input on it. So that was the only reason for the call. I appreciate it. And by the way, I think you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you so much, Rick, and I appreciate the call. Yeah, I, you know, being here on this show today, y'all know I'm on the sidelines every single weekend doing SEC games. So any behind the curtain questions that y'all have for me as far as what it's like going through meetings on Friday, getting ready for game day, what's happening on the sidelines, ask away. When it comes to the camera question, that's really interesting because, you know, I have worked broadcasts that have physically more cameras than other broadcasts do. Obviously, it's tough to notice that sometimes unless you're seeing some of those big time fanfare shots, things like that. I don't know, though, and maybe I can find this out after the show because it's a fascinating question. I don't know, though, how that contributes to what the officials are seeing, right? If ESPN's bringing 30 cameras as opposed to maybe 20 the week before, depending on whatever broadcast or regional network is carrying the game, I don't know how that affects actually what the officials and what the referees are looking at when they're on the phone with people who are up in the box and up in an office doing some of those replays. So that's a great question. I know I can tell you that some broadcasts have more cameras than others, but an interesting tie-in, though, to see how that could affect replay, certainly. Pat is in Georgia. Pat, what do you want to talk about today?
Hey, Alyssa, thanks. You were there Saturday night. Kirby was not happy, to say the least. And Kirby's a lot like your mama. If Kirby ain't happy, nobody's happy. The team reminded me of the Mark Richt era where we play down to our honorable opponent. The way we played Saturday opens up the South Carolina game. And I'm sure glad we're playing them at noon and not at night, because Williams-Brice Stadium rocks. And if you're sitting in the upper deck, there's something about the harmonics at Williams-Brice. The upper deck vibrates, and that's a weird feeling.
It's definitely, when you talk to players, former and current, across the SEC, it's one of those stadiums that you will get a resounding, nope, I do not like playing at Williams-Brice Stadium for all those reasons you just mentioned. But yeah, I mean, to your point, yeah, Kirby was not happy. I asked him after the game, you know, you get 14, I think it was, different receivers, 12 different pass catchers on the field. Stetson Bennett puts up 300 yards passing. You get two other quarterbacks into this game. What did you learn about your offense? And his immediate answer was, well, I learned that we're immature and we were undisciplined and we've got a lot to work on over the next week. It sounded a bit Saban-esque, honestly, if you ask me. And it sounded like somebody who's got his foot on the gas, finding any which way to motivate this team fresh off of a championship, because this Georgia team's here to stay, if you ask me, based on even what we saw on Saturday.
No, absolutely. And you brought up a good point, because my wife, Beverly, who knows more about football than I do, she said that Kirby sounded like Saban Saturday night in his in his anger or not being happy. And I said, and what's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
And she laughed. Let me ask you about Scott Frost at Nebraska. Is he so bad that they couldn't wait until October the 2nd to save a little money? They're going to have a hard time. They're going to have a hard time getting a decent head coach anyway, because what they've evolved into this year.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation. And we were actually talking about it out in the newsroom before this show. Why not wait a little bit and save, what is it, $7 million, I believe? But no, they were done. They clearly said, we need a change in pace. Usually, and I don't know what's going on in Nebraska, but usually when you see firings this early into the season, it means you're starting to lose the locker room, and you don't want to lose the entire season. You don't want to lose certainly the next two games, which could spiral your entire season. I've been joking that maybe we'll see Scott Frost on Alabama staff as an offensive analyst, because Saban just tends to save all of these head coaching careers who have gone kind of down the drain and need a little bit of help. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him here in the SEC.
One last question. I talked to you three or four weeks ago, the first time you were on the Paul Feinbaum show. And when you were between the hedges, when you first got down there, did you take 10 seconds and just take it all in?
Oh, I 100% I did. And I will say, you know, I've been all over the SEC. I've spent about 5 years here with the network now. And being in Athens for the network, I'd been before when I was working in local news, but I hadn't been for a game with the SEC network. So that was a bucket list for me this past weekend to finally be able to check that one off the list. And when I tell you, I know you saw it on TV, Georgia fans who were there in the stands saw it. This was a rainy day. It was supposed to be absolutely monsooning through the afternoon against an FCS opponent that everyone knew Georgia was going to blow out, and I didn't see an empty seat in the stadium. It was so impressive and really indicative of the excitement that Kirby Smart has built around this program and the excitement that I think we all have for the Georgia Bulldogs this season. Thank you so much for the call, Pat. We appreciate it as always. Hopefully, I'll get to go back to Athens at some point this season because, man, it was a great time. We do have to take a break, though, here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. More of your calls coming up next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Out of Pocket is back Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time right here on the SEC Network. Myself and Andrea Carter coming your way for an hour as we recap week two, spin ahead to week three across the SEC. Don't know if y'all were watching last week. We did a segment that we called the College Football Waffle House Index, essentially predicting games based on how many Waffle House establishments are in each state. And I will say, I think the Waffle House predictor did pretty well because Alabama edged out Texas by just a few Waffle Houses. Tennessee obliterated the state of Pennsylvania. Obviously, that game went into overtime, but still resulted in a dub for the Vols. So you never know. As we welcome you back here to the Paul Feinbaum Show, Alyssa Lang filling in for Paul today. 855-242-7285 is the number as we take more of your calls. Let's go to Corey in South Carolina. Corey, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Alyssa. First of all, it's great to be able to get through to you. And I think you got a great future in broadcasting, and you're doing a wonderful job. I just wanted to point out a couple quick things. First of all, I'm a diehard Bama fan, and your patience with dealing with Alabama fans is incredibly good. I'm impressed. I will say this much. Everybody has underestimated Texas. Texas came out on all sides of the football, defense, offense, special teams. Hell, their sideline was even in it. They played their hearts out, and you got to give Sark's on to something big right there. I mean, he's got his program developed, and I'm going to go ahead and call it that Texas wins out. The way they played, I hated seeing their quarterback go down. Hopefully it's not too serious. I haven't heard many of the updates. But if he'd have stayed in, I believe they would have whooped us. And, you know, they were already whooping us, but I believe it would have been bad. But I will say this much. Everybody's underestimating. Texas just played their hearts out. They just left everything on the field, and it was kind of impressive to watch. And, you know, even being a diehard Bama fan, I give nothing but respect to them. They just took it to us on every side of the ball. And, you know, we couldn't get anything going. Yeah, they had some missed calls out there too, and not to say that I'm thankful for that, but in a way I am. But that win is a luck win, and I honestly believe if Sark keeps it up, he's got a winning season ahead of him. And you know, I just wanted to hear what your thoughts are. Nobody's really given Texas. Everybody's saying Bama this, Bama that. Well, Texas came and played, and that's what really mattered. I mean, they played ball. So, what do you think?
No, I'm with you 100%, Corey. Thank you for the kind words that you led with. I really appreciate that. No, I think that
absolutely
that was a very impressive win by Alabama, despite the sloppiness that we saw from this Tide team. Just going off of everything you just said, right? This was a fired up Texas team, a fired up Texas coach, a fired up crowd. It was hot as all get out there in Austin. I mean, they had everything going for them, especially knowing we're going to be in this league in a couple of seasons. I believe it was the broadcast team who talked about how Sarkisian talked to them on Friday about how much he wanted to put a team on the field that would impress Nick Saban. And he didn't want to let Nick Saban down by putting a team on the field against this Tide team that would embarrass him, and he didn't. So I think it not only bodes well for the future of the SEC and this rivalry that could bud between these two head coaches, but we talk about it all the time, right? It sounds cliche and it sounds silly. The team who goes out there and wants it more is often the team that ends up winning the football game. Alabama just barely edged that out by a little bit, but Texas came in and they absolutely wanted that game. You cannot knock, and I appreciate you saying that you have a lot of respect for that Texas team, because I do as well. I was surprised that it went that way. I really thought Bama would take care of business a little bit more than they did, especially against some of those young Longhorn players. All right, we're going to take one more call before we hit the break. Braden is in Auburn, Alabama. Braden, what's on your mind today?
Hey, listen, nice to get to talk to you. So, obviously, calling from Auburn, not too hard to guess. I'm in my senior year here, and we've got a huge game coming up in Penn State. Brian Harsin kind of on the hot seat, coming off some controversy last season. We obviously got robbed last year up at Penn State, so now we get him at home. But, you know, we've got this two-quarterback struggle going on. Do you think we lead with Robbie Ashford? Do we stick with TJ? I want to hear your thoughts. And, you know, coming into week three, we've got a pretty huge game that could define our season.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Braden. Thank you so much for calling in. I kind of feel similarly to the situation out there in Texas A&M. If I had to guess, and I don't know, I haven't been to Auburn yet this season to talk to these guys. If I had to guess purely based on the fact that Finley has taken the majority of the snaps so far, and we've seen him the majority of the time, that they'd start with Finley. And if things start to go poorly, then maybe we throw Robbie Ashford in to give a team a little bit of momentum, maybe a little bit of a push. And if Ashford ends up taking it the rest of the way and finding success, maybe that's your quarterback for the rest of the season. But who knows? Like you said, Harsin is up against it at this point when it comes to pressure with this job. He's got to make the right decision, right? So I don't think anybody would be surprised if we saw a change at this point. But if they believe in Finley, I think they'll start Finley. If things don't go well in that crazy environment up there at Penn State, though, would not be surprised, as we've seen Ashford come into these games a little bit so far. Brayden, thank you so much for your call. We do have to take a break here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. When we come back, more of your calls. Keep on calling. We've got plenty to talk about, guys. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back into the Paul Feinbaum Show. Alyssa Lang here filling in for Paul. No worries, he will be back tomorrow. You just have to deal with me for a few more hours, but we've had a fun show so far. So much to talk about. I feel like we say it every single weekend. That was the wildest weekend in all of college football, but week two this year genuinely feels that way because I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface of what we saw in the SEC alone. Let's take some more of your calls. 855-242-7285 is the number. Let's go to Dan in Ohio. Dan, what do you want to talk about today?
Yes, I was commenting on the Texas game. And I watched the game.
What stood out to you about
Texas
the game?
Game? And I was just curious. Like Corey said, I think if that quarterback would have stayed in Alabama. I don't know what your thought process is, but...
Yeah,
but I know before one time, if that quarterback would have stayed in, and I don't know what it is, but for Alabama are told to try to knock out the player or whatever it takes, I don't know. But I remember the same thing happened a few years ago when Texas played Alabama and they knocked out Colt McCoy. So anyway, and plus, like I said, I think they had over 100 yards of penalties, Alabama did. So, anyway, I have to agree with Corey. I think Texas should have definitely won the game. That's all I got to say. That's my comment.
Yeah, Dan, thank you so much for calling in. I will be the first to admit that I didn't think it would be close. And I said that last week, not only on TOL, on Out of Pocket, on SEC Now. I thought it would be a blowout by Alabama, and it wasn't. So all the credit in the world to Texas. Obviously, the hypotheticals, if Quinn Ewers stays in the game, what does it look like? You know, I thought Hudson Card came in and played a pretty scrappy football game himself. So I don't think the backup is anything to blink at. But
like I said, they wanted the last minute, but very fortunate. But it was anybody's game, obviously, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Bama's obviously lucky to have committed, like you said, all those penalties, 100 yards
over 100
worth of penalties.
That's correct.
To win that football game. But when you have the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and Bryce Young making plays like he did with his legs towards the end there, I think it was, there were many of us, we were sitting in Athens going, oh, they got Bryce Young. Like, they're going to win the football game. It's just going to come down to it, and it's going to be stressful, and it's going to be insane. And it absolutely was. But
look like an Alabama team. They looked like they were so out of sync. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, plenty for Nick Saban to work on for sure over the next week. Dan, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Guy in South Carolina. Guy, what's on your mind today?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. And let me say, I'm a numbers man. And the last time I looked, Alabama had a higher number than the U of Texas, correct?
That's correct. They won the football game. Yep.
And as far as O'Dan goes, the last time we played the Buckeyes, we had 52-24 whipping on them, didn't we?
I believe that's correct.
Well, and you know I'm a numbers man, and also I just found out Saban is a magician because he took a non-ranked team and turned them into a top 25 team in one game.
100%. I would agree with you. Checks out.
I mean, all these Alabama haters. What's that guy from Auburn? I mean, you know, they beat some team that we never heard of by 8 points.
Yeah, San Jose State.
Wait a minute now. They are playing a Big Ten plus four team this weekend, so let's give them credit, right?
I think I know where you're going with this guy. I do feel like there is an element of saying, you know what? Hats off to Texas. Hard-fought game. Closer than we thought it was going to be. But like you said, in 6 weeks, what are we going to be saying? They won the football game. They started the season 2-0.
Let me give a shout-out to my Clemson friends. You know, Saban loves his little Debbies, but Dabo loves them cupcakes.
Well, you know what? You're coming from a state very, very special to me, Guy, and I would say that there are a lot of folks out there wearing garnet and black that might agree with that statement there as South Carolina gets set to welcome Georgia to Williams-Brice this upcoming weekend. Thank you so much, Guy, for the call. Yeah, Bama fans. Yeah.
Thank you so much, and RTR.
I love it. Bama fans, I know you're stressed. I know we've got things to figure out. I know we've got things to address when it comes to these pass catchers, when it comes to this offensive line. But you know what? A win is a win is a win against a Texas team that, as I said a few minutes ago, would have liked nothing more than to absolutely ruin your week two. I think we could print the t-shirts in Nick Saban, we trust. We've seen this story before. Coach Saban always figures it out. We're going to take a break when we come back. Brandon Zimmerman is here with some more SEC headlines.